The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, the online news editor of Science, is here to share a few stories that recently appeared on our daily news site. Well, Dave, penguins, exomoons, and LSD sounds like an unbeatable combination
to
me.
It is a very interesting mix of stories this week.
First, tell me why penguins are afraid of the dark.
Well, that was the going idea anyways. Scientists have been looking at two species of penguins in Antarctica, and these species are known as Adelie and Emperor penguins. And what's interesting about these penguins is they sort of act like daily commuters. They're up at the crack of dawn, they're out in the water, they're trying to catch krill and fish, and when dusk comes, they come back home, they sleep through the night. What's unusual about this behavior is that the food that these penguins dine on is actually easiest to catch after dark. It tends to be closest to the surface. So the question is, why are these penguins sleeping the night away when they could be a lot more productive hunting-wise if they try to catch these animals at night? And researchers have sort of wondered, well, not are penguins afraid of the dark, but maybe they can't see very well in the dark. Maybe there is something poor about their nighttime vision.
And is there?
Well, it turns out there's not. In this new study, a group of researchers actually went out in the field and they outfitted a group of about 65 of the Adelie penguins with these time depth recorders. And these are little devices that measure how deep the penguins swim and also how dark it is where they swim. And what they found was that the Adelie penguins tend to hunt prey at about 50 to 100 meters below the surface. And the water is actually pretty dark down there. It's akin to early night. And the penguins can actually even go farther down than this into deeper waters that are almost pitch black and hunt just as effectively. So what does all this mean? Well, all this means is that the penguins can see very effectively in the dark. So it's not their lack of nighttime vision that's preventing them from going out at night and hunting.
Okay, well, if it's not the night vision, what is it?
Well, the researchers think it has everything to do with predation. There are two big penguin killers, or what the researchers think are penguin killers, in the Antarctic. One is leopard seals, and the other is killer whales. Leopard seals actually tend to rest at midday, so they're less likely to kill penguins during this time, and that's why the researchers think penguins are doing a lot of their hunting during the day. And there's actually no direct evidence that killer whales are actually killing these penguins, but there is anecdotal evidence that they can and that they do kill other penguin species in other parts of the Antarctic. So all this together suggests that the penguins may actually be afraid of the dark, not because they can't see in it, but because they're afraid of getting killed by a predator.
So they'd rather eat a little less than be eaten themselves.
Exactly. And actually, the predation is apparently such a concern for them that they even have altered their migration patterns. They go way out of their way when they're migrating in the Antarctic summer. Instead of sticking to the closest and richest waters for food, they swim north to far less productive waters. And a lot of them die during this journey, but they're willing to make the journey because it's actually, in the long run, a lot safer for them than sticking around in places where they could get killed by a predator.
So kind of interesting that fear plays such a big role here.
Exactly.
And next, an argument for life on moons outside of our solar system?
Right, Stuart, this next story is all about trying to find alien life. And what astronomers have been doing so far is they've been looking for what's called exoplanets. These are planets that are in solar systems beyond our own. And they've actually racked up a fair number of these planets, a few hundred so far, actually. But the problem with most of these planets is very few of them, if any of them, have been Earth-like. A lot of them tend to be what's called gas giants, which are these giant planets the size of Jupiter and Saturn. These are very hot planets. They tend to be very close to their parent stars. They're very gaseous. They're not very good places for life. Well, in this new study, astronomers say, well, maybe those planets are not good for life, but maybe they have moons orbiting them that resemble our planet. And if these planets are orbiting their sun about the same distance that Earth is orbiting our sun, perhaps their moons could support life.
Well, how on earth do you actually establish such a thing?
Well, we obviously can't go visit. So what researchers do, or at least what they did in this study, was they constructed some computer models. They actually made a computer model of about 12,000 hypothetical planets that were about the size of Earth. The idea is that these planets would exist perhaps in an early solar system, and they would be captured by the gravity of a gas giant. And what happens, according to the simulations, is a lot of these planets start orbiting the gas giant, but over the course of hundreds of thousands of years, half of them crash into the gas giants, or they're spat out of orbit, so they don't meet very good fates. But the other half tend to evolve steady orbits, which allow them to develop stable climates over billions of years, and stable climates are important for harboring life.
Well, it's interesting, but it sounds a bit speculative, too.
Well, exactly. And not only is it speculative, but even if all these things go right, the actual fraction of gas giants that would be harboring an Earth-like planet, or at least a planet habitable towards life, is actually pretty low. The team estimates that only about 10% of the gas giants in a habitable zone would capture an Earth-like exomoon. And if only about 50% of those move into stable orbits and all these other factors, they estimate that of the roughly 300 or so gas giant planets that have been found so far, only about a dozen might harbor habitable moons. But still, that's a dozen potential Earths out there.
Well, does anybody have any thoughts about just what kind of life we're talking about on these exomoons?
Well, it's a good question. And one of the other problems with gas giants is they tend to have very strong radiation belts. And you can imagine if you're a moon orbiting that gas giant and you're being blasted with radiation, that's not going to be a very good environment for life. But what the researchers say in this study is that water and solid dirt block a lot of this radiation, or at least they would block a lot of this radiation. So there's a possibility for life perhaps underground or undersea. So again, there's a lot of caveats here, but it does sort of expand the realm of places that we might find life beyond our solar system.
And finally, the newest headache remedy, LSD.
Right. Well, it's kind of an unexpected headache remedy. You wouldn't think to turn to a psychedelic drug to cure your headaches, but there's a type of headache it appears to be very effective against. And this is a type of headache called cluster headaches. Now, for anybody that's had these are incredibly agonizing headaches. Patients describe the feeling of somebody trying to pull their eyes out for hours. This is a very unpleasant headache. In fact, it's often referred to as a suicide headache because it's so unpleasant, patients almost want to kill themselves. There have been a few treatments that have been available in the past. Some studies have showed that inhaling pure oxygen seems to help. Other types of drugs that block calcium channels also seem to help. And some anecdotal reports have suggested that psychedelic drugs like LSD and psilocybin may also confer some benefits, but they haven't been scientifically tested up until now.
So what was the scientific test applied here?
Well, the researchers in this study didn't actually use the LSD. They used an analog called 2-bromo-LSD, which is highly related to LSD, but it doesn't have the hallucinogenic properties.
Oh, well.
That takes a little bit of the fun out of it. But what they did was they recruited 6 people that had these cluster headaches. They gave them this LSD analog once every 5 days for a total of about 3 doses. And what happened was that all patients reported a reduction in the frequency of their headaches, and 5 patients reported having no headaches for months afterwards. In fact, some of them are still reporting significant relief more than a year after the study was completed.
Well, is 6 patients really enough to say something like this?
Well, that's the problem. It's promising, and it's good to test these things that were only sort of suspected anecdotally before. But one of the problems with this trial is that there were really no controls. It was not a blinded study, as researchers like to say. In other words, these patients knew they were getting a treatment. There was no placebo group. In fact, a study that had tested the effect of pure oxygen had shown that about 20% of the patients actually didn't get pure oxygen. They just got basically just regular air. And even they reported some relief. So it's possible that some of this effect is due to the placebo group. The scientists have founded a company based on their idea, though, and obviously they are going to keep on testing this to hopefully show that this LSD analog does have efficacy against these very severe headaches.
Okay, Dave, what other stories are you looking into on the news site?
Well, Stuart, for Science Now, we've got a story about why happy orangutans live longer. Also a story about how an organ transplant drug may reverse premature aging. And for Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a new story about a controversial new prize that's been offered by a scientist / former politician to promote research into the origin of life and what his ulterior motive is for offering this prize. Also a story about the latest battle over stem cell research in the U.S. What's happening in the courts over efforts to ban federal funding for stem cell research. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science. This week's chat is about the effect of climate change on wildfires. Is global warming driving an increase in wildfires around the world? So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.